All right, here we go, our third and final hour on this Friday morning. And as he did a little more than a year ago, here to provide solace, comfort, or maybe not, Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State and the University of Colorado. And let's, Dr. Perea, for those who are not familiar with the presentation, not familiar with your background, take a few steps back, go back to where we were almost 13 months ago when we first introduced you here. And have you explain exactly what distinguishes your general level of analysis from what we generally practice here on talk radio and even many teams, both professionally and collegiately, practice in the way they analyze games, players, teams.
Right. First of all, great to be here, Sandy. It's
good
a really great opportunity for us to all learn from this experience. Yeah, let me tell you about my background real quick. You know, I have a PhD in industrial organizational psychology. And what that means is we help organizations perform at peak levels through human capital enhancement. And that means we get their workers to perform at their peak levels. My degree is a little specialized in that my comprehensive exam and my dissertation were centered around sport and competitiveness and how athletes and coaches work together. So it's very specific to that. In addition to that, Sandy, I played college football. I was actually in the Broncos training camp. I wasn't just like a mini camp signee.
A little more than 30 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Jeez. You had to date me, huh, Sandy?
1983.
Yeah, rookie. Same year as Elway. And, you know, I signed a three-year contract. And, you know, I remember those days. You know, I can remember the minimum, Sandy. The minimum in the NFL was $42,000. Can you imagine that? And I signed a three-year contract, so I was in mini camp and training camp with them. So I've been around football at all levels, and so I'm not saying that makes me unique and the only person that can comment and analyze on these topics, but it does make me have a certain competency and acumen to be able to delineate these aspects. And the one thing I want to distinguish today, when we talk about the Broncos and the Seahawks game, and then also the Broncos going forward,
right?
It's from an organizational perspective. I want fans to remember this. I know a lot of fans look at the Broncos as a sport team, and they are. But at a core level, they are an organization. And as such, they should be run like an organization. And so what that means is that people have to be accountable. There have to be assessments on performance and analysis every year, if not biannually. And we'll talk a lot about that today and how that really plays out after this type of performance. Because I can tell you this, Sandy, in the corporate world, which I work with organizations like IBM, and let's think about this. IBM's trying to do the same thing the Broncos are, trying to beat their competition. And so this type of performance that happened last Sunday would not, on many levels, would not be tolerated. So I think it'll be interesting during this hour to discuss about how we can understand the Broncos from an organizational perspective and where they go from here.
The early signs, the reaction as you've perceived it this week coming from the Broncos, you have not been thrilled with it.
No. No. I think that, especially if I go by the press conference, I do have a few people that have, you know, good positions within the NFL and can tell me certain things. But based on what I saw and heard at the press conference, you know, Sandy, it was devoid of content. You know, I didn't hear anybody really take accountability. I would have liked to have seen that. You know, when Alabama lost to Auburn, Nick Saban had a press conference on campus. And the first thing he said is, you know what? Don't blame my players. Don't blame my assistants. This is on me.
I was outcoached.
I'm the head guy. Yeah. I got outcoached. Yeah. We were not in position. And he really took accountability. And you love that from a head guy. You can rally behind that kind of leadership. And I didn't hear anything like that on Tuesday.
You know, you did hear that from Bill Belichick, too, following the AFC Championship game. I mean, we all focused on his Welker comments, which I thought in many ways were comments unwarranted and out of line. But amid all of that, he took a lot of that loss on himself.
Yes.
I think one of his quotes was, "Nobody in this building makes more mistakes than I've made over the last few years.
Absolutely. And he does take accountability. And you know, Sandy, when I work with an organization, someone hires me to come in and make climate and culture change. I darn well better make that change. And I'm held accountable to do it. And I'm glad at that. And if I don't make change, then they don't have to pay me. Because I tell you what, it's our job as IO psychologists to make change, make positive change in climate and culture. And I would have liked to have heard something like this. I would have liked to have heard Elway and or Fox say something like this. You know what? It's my job to get this team performing at peak levels. We didn't perform at a peak level on Sunday. I'm accountable for that. I'll look at myself. I'll look at my coaches. We will look at ourselves on a deep level. We will analyze where we are. And you can rest assured that we will work to get better. Take some level of accountability. I'm not saying tell us your protocols and practices. I didn't say that. But at least take some level of accountability and say, you know what? It's my job to get this football team ready to play. John Fox, that's his job, is to get that team ready to play. And they weren't, as you can see, not ready to play. I'll say this. The Broncos didn't lose speed. They didn't lose size. They didn't lose athleticism on the plane ride to New Jersey. Okay? It all arrived. What happened was the mental perspective, the mental state, the approach to the game somehow did not arrive with them, or somewhere in that 6 days while they were there. It was not sharpened like a knife. Just like the physiological piece has to be sharpened, the mental piece has to be sharpened. And after watching last night in the NFL Network, those sound bites,
right?
They were alarming.
That's
to me.
Alarming.
Alarming.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. They look bad.
You have some players joking and discussing who's going to get the MVP and why they're going to get the MVP.
Champ Bailey in the fourth quarter is debating over who's going to get the MVP
at the end of the game. Yeah. That is, in my opinion, that is not the proper climate and culture for you to be discussing that. If you just got your butt handed,
can you imagine the Seattle people doing that if the situation had been reversed and they were behind like that?
And I'm not unrealistic. I work with NFL teams, so I know some of these guys aren't the most motivated guys in the world, but still, they know they're mic'd. Understand when you say and what you say it, and that really looks bad on the team. And so for me, Sandy, I'm a climate and culture guy, and I just think the Broncos need to take a deep look at themselves right now from an organizational perspective, because it's no given that they're going to get back there. As you had chronicled early today, there's other teams that are getting better.
Yeah.
And in the AFC, they're getting better. You know,
the San Diego Chargers are standing still. Right.
And Kansas City's getting better. So I think Denver really better take a hard look. And I'm not calling for anybody's job per se, but there better be a deep analysis, a systematic analysis on job performance, because what happened last Sunday was, for Bronco fans, nothing short, and I'll repeat the word, nothing short of embarrassing.
You make the point that, and you remind us, that Elway said last year they're going to learn from the loss.
Right.
And get better.
Yep.
Fox's conclusion is that, hey, we did get better. 13-4, 15-4. Divisional loss in the playoffs at home to Baltimore, when we were heavily favored, to the Super Bowl. Yes, we played badly, but it was a great year. That's part of what you're referring to.
Yes.
You don't like that. On a certain quantitative level, you can say, hey, that's right. But on your qualitative level of analysis, you're pretty much saying that's dead wrong.
Yes, it is. Because, I mean, again, quantitatively, they have improved. They advanced further all the way to the Super Bowl. But from a qualitative perspective, you have to look at this team and how they react when adversity set in. You know, I think Chad Brown said it real well. He says they got hit in the mouth and they didn't fight back. You know, adversity is going to set in on an NFL team at any given time, and how you react to that is key. So I think it's important to understand that quantitatively they did improve, but qualitatively they may have taken a step backwards, because here you got two
games. In other
words,
they're further away.
Yeah.
Well, than they were a year ago from what is, in everybody's mind, the ultimate goal, and that's a championship.
Well, okay, so one of the reasons you bring me here, Sandy, is because I'm a psychologist, and I can tell you this for a fact. They have, in their record now, 2 years, two games where they have been eliminated. One game, and both were embarrassing. One was a last-second play, and then they took a knee, and that whole debacle about, you know, should they have taken a knee with two timeouts left and 37 seconds left. That game ended in that manner. This game ended by a pure, just dominant piece. So now you go into this third season, and Peyton Manning has that emotional, mental, psychological baggage, and he'll tell you he doesn't carry it, but he will carry it as long as everybody keeps reminding him, and perhaps even for himself. And until he learns to regulate that, it is going to get heavier and heavier and heavier.
I like this from the 949. We'll go into the break on this, and you can come back. And I sort of agree with it. I'd consider, the texter says, Elway as having been accountable in the presser. Fox was absolutely not accountable. Fox has gotten far more heat than any other member of the organization, player, owner, executive, this week. Does he deserve it? We'll focus in on that. We'll obviously get to many other things, including your phone calls, more of your texts. Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea in studio for the remainder of the program up until noon on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us, Sandy Clough on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan from the 303. Sandy, Dr. Rick is great. Does he feel Coach Fox is capable of installing a more demanding environment considering he's perceived as a player's coach? Great way to kick off a little bit of a focus here in this segment on Fox.
Right. For the texter, there's two ways to answer that question. Number one, he does not always have to be the person to bring that Pied Piper kind of toughness, that nastiness. Sometimes head coaches do it. Bill Cowher did it. There are other coaches that have done it. But if he's not going to be the guy, then he's got to bring somebody on board that is. You know, one thing I'm struck by with the Broncos is they don't have a full-time mental enhancement guy that's on the sidelines during practice and during the week. You know, and I keep going to Alabama. I probably sound so biased, but I just love what we do with them and what they do. You know, they got a full-time guy, Trevor Moehn, who's on the sidelines. His only job is to monitor the players from a mental perspective. Are they feeling good? Are they up? Are they passionate? And then if they're not, he gets them beside and he talks to them a little bit and monitors that. It's so important to do that. So to answer the texter, I will just say this. In terms of his personality and what he brings, he's not a climate and culture changer. But that doesn't mean he can't still remain as the head coach and they bring somebody else who is.
Right.
Because something's got to change with this team in terms of its mental toughness. Again, they didn't lose speed. They didn't lose athleticism. They didn't lose size on that plane ride to New Jersey. But they did lose their mental edge somewhere along the line.
We were talking during the break. I wasn't around Seattle last week because my show airs opposite their press engagements as the schedule was developed during the week. I did get out and see a lot more of the Broncos, obviously. But I watched on Friday morning at the joint conference a week ago, Carroll and Fox together on Friday morning in Midtown Manhattan. And I was very impressed by Carroll.
Yes.
And you had some observations to make regarding that joint press conference.
Yes, absolutely. As I've said here before, Sandy, one of my competencies is nonverbal communication. And, you know, when watching that press conference, they were sitting down. And, you know, I've noticed this with Fox before. He on the sidelines, he chews gum at a high rate. He often is playing with his little electronic box that hooks up to his headset.
Right.
And he's just a real high anxiety, high arousal type guy. Now, nothing wrong with that. It's not the end of the world, but players can see that. Players can feed off. Conversely, you look over at Pete Carroll, he's sitting there with his legs crossed and he's relaxed and he's got a real easy smile on his face.
At the press conference.
At the press conference. Yeah. He answers questions with fluidness. He's a great communicator. You know, I got to be honest, John Fox, from a verbal and oral perspective, is not a great communicator, and I think that's one of his downfalls. He has strengths, and we all have weaknesses, but one of his weaknesses, he's not a great communicator. He begins every sentence with, and that's a verbal, that's a vocal filler. And in public speaking, we teach people not to use that. You might say, well, that doesn't matter. Players, nonverbal communication is more reliable than verbal communication. And when coaches, either verbally, nonverbally, or vocally, do not communicate effectively, players pick up on that. He has his strengths. I don't want to rain down on Fox today. He has his strengths, but he also better understand his limitations because after that performance, Everybody needs to be accountable. And that's what I would have loved to hear at that presser, to just say, hey, you know what? It's on me as the executive vice president of football. It's on me to get this team performing. It's me. It's my job as the head coach of this football team to perform at the high level. I'm going to look at myself. I'm going to analyze myself. We're going to look and find out where we need to get better. And we're going to rest assured we're going to work our butts off to get there. I'd love to hear something like that.
All right. To the phones. Helen. You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me? I've got you on speaker.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I have three questions for the doctor, and I just want to say I'm so glad you're talking about this. I think this is brilliant, and I love this conversation. I really do. I have two sons in their early 20s. The younger one, 22, had to – He was at his brother's house watching the game, and he had to physically leave the premises
yes.
in the third quarter because
yes.
he was so upset.
Yes.
His older brother, the 25-year-old, who's an engineer now, a young engineer, he was so impacted that he took off Monday from work.
Yes.
He was in shock. And I want to ask about that psychological effect on us who embrace this activity of being fans, and how, and then this, my second question is then how can we and me drill down and take lessons from this crushing defeat,
right?
In such a visible stage. What do they say? Like a billion people watched the game. I mean, oh my, how humiliating is that?
111 million anyway. Yeah.
Well, whatever it was, a big number.
Yes.
I want to embrace the lessons from that in my own life.
Yes. You know, Helen, you ask great questions. And yeah, I heard many stories of people have to physically left watching the game, whether here in Denver or New York. I mean, people were really affected by that. And that's the piece I'm talking about with Elway and more so Fox at the presser. Understand the fans' point of view. You know, I know how they're looking at it, but understand the fans invest a lot of emotion into this team. And to kind of just walk away and say, well, we didn't play well. And just,
it creates the impression, whether it's true or not, that the fans care more than the players.
Right.
That's simplistic. I understand
right.
it.
Right.
But I've always felt on some level at
sure.
least that's true.
Yeah, and I think it is true on some level.
Because the fans absorb the
right.
history and everything else.
Absolutely.
And the players and the coaches are in the here and now and looking ahead and
right.
aren't generally historians.
Right. But let me answer Helen's question. So for her sons, I would say this, is understand that professional athletics is a changing climate and culture in and of itself. You know, with free agency, teams are more transient. Not only teams, but the players are more transient. They come and go. They're not as really connected to the community. You know, when I grew up in the Denver area, players like Tom Jackson, Randy Gradishar, Bob Swenson, they played basically their whole careers here. You don't see that anymore. So it's much more transient. You know, I would say invest fully as being a fan. That's okay. But understand the piece where it is a business, it is entertainment. And, you know, some people don't want to hear that, but at a core level, the Broncos are a business. Number two, they're entertainment. Number three, they're a sport. And fans put them number one as a sport, and that's where you have that disconnect. So don't feel bad, or for your sons, don't feel bad that they had to physically leave. They're invested. And your son who missed work, hopefully, you know, he'll go back to work and recover. But I just want to say that, you know, just kind of take – step back and put some perspective and understand that, you know, they may not be as invested as you are, and just take it with a grain of salt. I mean, they did have a fairly successful year up to that point, but understand they got beat by a better team that played better on that day. And maybe just rejoice in just that Seattle played better and beat them. I guess that's my best advice I can give you right now, Helen.
11:26, Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea in studio on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Don't you love her madly? 11:32 on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clough with you. Dr. Rick Perea, the in-studio guest. We'll continue on the phones. We'll get to more of your texts, 303-228-1043, 2958 Total Beverage text line. Quickly before we get back on the phones, and we have three lines open at the moment. Tom Jackson.
Yep.
You mentioned his name a few moments ago.
Yeah.
Climate and culture guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's on ESPN after the game. Within 20 minutes of the game's being over. And they're talking about how the safety changed everything right at the beginning.
Sure.
Saying, forget about that. The pregame warm-ups, I could tell, when the two teams came out.
Yes.
Looked like an NFL team and a college team.
Yeah. I mean, I get that sense, Sandy. And, you know, some people are not climate and culture people. They don't see that part of the game. They're more of an X's and O's, and they're an execution piece. And I get that. And I get that from Gase. I get that from Fox. That's what they are. And that's okay. But you got to have the other piece. You know, Tommy Jackson is a climate and culture guy. So he sees that stuff. That's how he played his career. He played with passion. He played with energy. So if he saw that, I saw that. There's many people that saw that nonverbal piece, that this team doesn't walk with a swagger. Now, again, my job is not to come here and rain down on Elway and Fox today, but I would simply say this to them. Challenge yourselves to figure out how to get that. Don't just, you know, go in your foxhole, so to speak, no pun intended, but don't go in your foxhole and say, oh, they're just attacking us. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but understand that there are people out there in the industry that's their job, to teach you how to cultivate passion, energy, an edge in your climate from an organizational perspective. We do it with IBM. We do it with Ford Motor Company. We do it with these organizations. You can do it with football teams, but the disconnect is, Sandy, some of these football coaches think they know how to do that, and some of them it's not. It's not their strong point. X's and O's, execution, that's their strong point. And if you don't have that, you better get somebody who understands that. And Pete Carroll is someone that brings in outside people to cultivate that, to develop that. And it proved itself on Sunday.
All right, Donna, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Hi. I have an interesting view, I guess, in that I think on our team, the business side didn't exactly have the cultivate a climate, because we have 16 free agents and some lame duck players like Champ Bailey, and maybe even John Fox wanting an extension. And an example of that is I got a bad feeling about the game when a story was leaked about Knowshon Moreno being singled out as not coming back. And I thought that would hurt him psychologically.
It's a very good point. We haven't heard that this week, but it's a very interesting point. Donna,
and you guys have been making a lot about, like you said today, that he didn't say anything on the sound bites. He took himself out of the game after it was out of hand.
Right.
And I kind of thought he had a, well, screw this attitude. If you're not
Yeah, maybe that's attitude, reading too much in, but I think your essential point is a very interesting one. I want to get Dr. Perea's response to that. A lot of free agents. Elway's statement the other day, we mentioned, I'm not negotiating with anybody between now and March 11th.
Right.
They can all hit the open market. Doesn't mean we'll lose them all, but.
Yeah.
They indicated a certain level of dissatisfaction with the collective performance of the entire team, but particularly those free agents.
Yeah, and I think the caller has a great point. I mean, she's talking from a structural perspective in terms of how many free agents they have coming up at the same time, and I understand her point. But I think at the same time, Elway's got to understand that – and he played, and he knows, and I think he knows to a certain extent – you know, the NFL spends so much time, Sandy, on personnel assessment, on personnel evaluation. It's coming up here in a few weeks at the Combine. And that has to be done. But more needs to be done in the NFL of understanding how people perform better, how people perform at peak levels, how to do that mentally, how to do that psychologically. And hopefully this will be an example for other coaches to watch and say, okay, something was disconnected there. When you got players saying that Seattle wanted it more than us, and then Elway bristles at that, and he says, bristles at that. That is a disconnect, Sandy, and that bothers me, because if players thought, I mean, imagine this, Sandy. Have you ever heard a heavyweight championship fighter said, you know what, that guy just wanted it more than me tonight? You would never hear that in a million years. the same thing with this. If players are saying that Seattle wanted it more than them and they're willingly admitting that on tape, on camera, then there is something going on with the climate culture.
That was Dominic Rogers Cromartie, who says a lot of things, not all of which we can take seriously. But Wes Welker, to me, more bitingly, then we weren't prepared.
Right, right. And if he says they're not prepared, people, Elway and Fox, have to look inside and figure out, how do we change? How do we change ourselves and transform ourselves into a tougher, rough team that really, when we get hit in the mouth, we hit back? We don't just take those blows and understand how, we're going to score more points than them. That's one approach. But on defense, on special teams, that's a big thing. And again, it's about changing the climate and culture so your team feels comfortable enough to go out there with this mentality like, you know what, I'm going to lay it on the line, and there's nothing that's going to hold me back from that.
On the audio last night, they're laughing, the Seahawks, at the Broncos in that second half kickoff.
Yes,
they're
absolutely.
Laughing at them.
They're laughing at them because they said before the game, Sandy, we can rattle Manning. We can rattle Manning. And here's something that Denver.
But it's like this on the kickoff.
No, I got you. Right. I got you. But it's not just – it's all the whole team. Seattle was saying before the Super Bowl they knew they could rattle Manning. There's this – it's not a dirty little secret. There's this little notion out there in the NFL that Peyton Manning can be rattled. And if the evidence keeps mounting as it does, especially in these last 2 years, teams are just going to smell blood. They're going to smell blood, and they're going to come after him, and they're going to figure out ways to put him in situations where he has to make crucial decisions and hope that he doesn't respond, like the evidence suggests in the last 2 years.
All right. The phone calls are pouring in, so we're going to focus on those and go next to Tom. You're on the fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Prietz. You've been my favorite segment this entire year. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for the kind words.
I have two great questions, I hope. Peyton Manning, I'd like you to get inside Peyton Manning's head, where he was at before the game, and what he needs to do to go forward. And also, do you think the Broncos are even open to any of this kind of new age thinking where they bring some doctors in, such as yourself? And do you know some doctors specifically that could step right in and help the Broncos?
Well, let me answer your second question first. You know, here's one of the things that plagues our industry. We have a lot of what people call themselves sports psychologists, but they really don't have an orientation towards sport. Let me give you an example. There's people out there that are clinical psychologists, have been for 20, 30 years, and then, at the end of their career says, I really have an interest in sport, so I want to work with athletes. That's great. But do you understand the climate and culture you're walking into? When I first worked with Joe Panunzio at Alabama football, the first thing he said to me, he says, there's a lot of kooks in your industry. That's what he said to me. He says, there's a lot of kooks in your industry. And so what happens to us is people go into climate and cultures that they're not qualified to do and understand. And therefore, someone, let's say, will go to the Broncos and work with them, and they'll like, oh, my gosh, they don't understand us as a team. They don't understand how to connect to the players. So they get scared and they get spooked. And then so people that are qualified, we have to go in and clean up the mess. So to answer your question, there are not a lot of people that have a PhD level education that also have that football background to understand the climate and culture. Because I can tell you this, football coaches, it's just as important that you understand their culture and get along with their players and connect with their players than your competency. That's very important. And to be quite honest with you, I was a football player. I got hit in the head a lot, so I forgot your first question.
We'll move on.
Okay.
Because I think you addressed there, and we're coming up against the break, but I also want to get to this point that you've made. Seattle playing with that high level of social task cohesion that you've talked about so much in this program before. Why is that?
Because Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll.
It's Carroll with all the experiences, some good, many not so good.
Sure.
USC,
yep.
New England, the New York Jets, San Francisco 49ers as an assistant.
Yes.
When he chose that over being Mike Shanahan's first defensive coordinator when Shanahan returned here to be the head coach in 1995.
Right. Here's research-supported evidence, Sandy. The CEO, the head coach, The leader of an organization can set the climate and the culture immediately. A principal goes into a new school. A CEO goes into a business. A head coach goes into a football team. They set the climate and culture by their expectations. Pete Carroll sets the tone for that team. He's open. He's progressive. He brings in people, outside people. When he doesn't have a competency, Sandy, he puts his hand up and he's the first to say, "I don't. That's not my job. I'm bringing this guy in. I'm bringing this lady in." They have a competency. That shows strength and self-efficacy, that he's willing to bring in people that where he doesn't have a competency. Okay, he's the reason that Seattle plays with that level of cohesion. Sandy, I got to tell you, that defense, you know, people talk about physicality, but they're not only physical, they're athletic. That comes from draft, from understanding the draft. They got the right guys in the right situation.
And not all first and second round picks, by the way.
And they're not all first rounders and second rounders. They're seven rounders, five rounders, guys that play with team cohesion. I have never seen a defense, Sandy, where their one technique, their three and their five, that's their nose and their tackles, run to the ball like they did. I was astounded.
Astonishing.
I was astounded how their one technique was making tackles on the sidelines, and he was busting his 310 pounds over there every play. The cohesion that that team plays with is built because they take care of task, they do their job, and that's taking care of their job, and then that builds that social cohesion. The reason they were so confident, Pete Carroll says, "We knew we could beat this team if we executed the way we wanted to. We knew, not hope, wish, or dream, we knew," because he knows how this defense plays together. He knows how this offense is calm, cool, collected, doesn't get rattled. They stay in their game plan because he sets a climate and culture. I heard that this happened, and I can't verify it, but that on Thursday he was wrestling with one of his offensive linemen in the hotel lobby.
And Friday he's telling him, "Turn up the music.
Turn up the music.
Turn it up. Don't turn it down. Turn the speakers down. Turn it up."
He's bringing DJs to practice. He's bringing rappers to practice. And it's a loose and easy climate. Players can be themselves. And, Sandy, when you can truly feel comfortable in your own skin, that's when you can deploy that psychological, that physiological piece where you can play at peak levels. And it was evident on Sunday. And it's a great case study for us in the psychological profession.
And it's a guy's viewed up until last two or three years as a failed coach, at least on the professional level.
Well,
fascinating.
He was given the leeway to implement his protocols.
He's given the power and the leeway, which
absolutely.
He didn't have with the Jets.
Right.
The 1 year he was there and didn't have in any of the years. But you're, on paper at least, somewhat successful in New England between Parcells and Belichick. Sandy Clef, Dr. Rick Perea, Denver's sports station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Stay with us. 11:49, Sandy Clef, Dr. Rick Perea in the studio on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. We'll go to the top of the hour with Dr. Perea, of course, and continue on the phones with Keith. You're on The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hey, I was just thinking, you know, with Peyton Manning, during the pregame thing when Richard Sherman made the comment about, you know, he throws ducks, and a reporter said that to Peyton. He didn't get defensive, and this he kind of, you know, joked with it and had a good time with it.
Yeah, he handled it well. Sure.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking that, you know, when it comes to I know before we got Peyton Manning, my opinion was of him that he kind of choked during the big games. And so I thought, well, when we got him, he's doing so well. I'm keeping that in the back of my mind, but hopefully it's not true. But it's becoming apparent that he does tighten up and does not play his best football.
Okay, but why? If that's the case, why? Is it matter of just not reacting to any of the circumstances or being in this case as opposed to other ways in which the Broncos weren't prepared sufficiently, over-programmed, talking with Bruce Arians and Sean Payton as if he didn't have enough information on Seattle to begin with?
Yeah.
Rodney Harrison told us the other day, hold on, Rodney, I'll let you make your point, I promise. But Rodney Harrison came on and said he spoke with Bruce Arians Saturday, the day before the game, and kind of was skeptical about it because he heard the same story. Arians got very, very defensive about it. Oh, that's the way Peyton's always prepared. And Rodney turned out to be right. Yeah, Ronnie, two and a half.
Say, look at Tiger Woods, for example. You know, he started out his career, he saved his best golf for the majors. Now he plays great during the regular season, but he can't win a major. And it's a psychological
thing. Bingo. I don't think it's choking, though, but we'll ask the expert here. What do you think about that?
Well, there's two different levels of anxiety we measure and look at in sport and general performance in general. And that's somatic, and that's body, and cognitive anxiety. So for Peyton, there's somatic. That means body. That means his muscle tense up, increased heart rate, increased respiration. Cognitive anxiety means you do not think as clearly. There's too many external thoughts leaking into your head, and therefore you can't filter out the irrelevant cues. So whether it's somatic anxiety or cognitive anxiety, I can't answer because I'm not around him.
Okay, but
clearly,
the people who have been say it's more of the latter. Now, at this point in his career, the worst thing you can do, particularly against a team with which he thinks he is unfamiliar, give him the extra win. Worst thing for him is to
right.
have the 2 weeks.
Right. And I think, yeah.
Because he doesn't filter anything out.
Paralysis by too much analysis, and I think that's going on with him. But again, the coaches need to be able to recognize that and be able to rein him in and say, understand where we go over too much. Back off a little bit and let's really.
You don't need to talk to Sean Payton.
Exactly.
You don't need to talk to Bruce Arians. You have plenty of information.
And this is where, Sandy, I get back to the climate and culture stuff. I keep coming back to that because coaches can set that tone. Coaches, you know, Gase can say, hey, you know what? We don't need to go that far into this analysis. We don't need to you don't need to talk to external people. We're doing it enough. Back off. Let's just play the game.
Play.
Play the game.
That's
like
what
Rodney
Harrison
you know
said the other day. It's a play.
You know, like we used
just
to play.
Play.
Just
and if
play
the
game.
Play, reason and the crowd noise is a factor and you see something well you want to check out of the just run the play
right
it's second and 10 if it doesn't work.
And you know what, the play, any ex-football player will tell you this, the first play of the game is when you have the highest level of anxiety because you haven't released it yet. Run the play, bleed off some of that arousal, bleed off some of that anxiety so you can get to a more a cognitive piece of the game where you can actually make some astute decisions.
All right, Steve, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Pareja. Hello.
Hey, Sandy. Hey, Dr. Pareja.
Hey, Steve.
I got a quick comment, and then I have a question for the good doctor. I interpreted Wes Welker's statement to say, you know, Bill Belichick would have had us a lot more prepared. That's how I interpreted it. And I have for years thought Fox was too soft and maybe not too bright. But my question is, the climate you're talking about, does this not – it doesn't have to be John Fox, but does this lack of accountability, I'll call it, in this climate, could that bleed to the way the players act off the field? And I'll hang up and listen.
Absolutely, yes. Expectations of your climate culture is on the field, it's off the field. It's your organization as a whole. I'll give you an example. That there are some coaches, when something goes wrong, they call the player in, they hold them accountable, they make a decision, and it's done right away. You can make an argument in this organization, Sandy, let's go back to last summer. There were some things that happened right. in the front office where some people would make the argument there was not accountability. There was not accountability in the front office to some of the transgressions from a few people all the way down. So absolutely, the caller is very astute to say that because you can set the climate and the culture on the field and off the field by the head guy and then how it trickles down in their expectations.
Chad James, we're out of time. We're sorry about that. We will have you back here in a
Great.
Few weeks in
Great.
Fairly short order, and we can talk more about a subject that, again, we had every intent, not in closing out entirely the conversation this morning, but kind of putting a ribbon
sure,
around it.
Sure.
I think there's still a lot of stuff out there.
Absolutely.
And you have brought some additional points to light. Which are fascinating, and we appreciate, as always, your time today, Dr.
Great
Pareja.
To be here, Sandy. Always love it, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, that's Dr. Rick Pareja. We will pause here at the top of the hour. We'll take a look at what is going on at the Olympic Winter Games in Sochi, and we'll bring you up to date on the latest in sports. Drew and Scott just ahead, noon to 3, and, of course, the drive with Big Al and D-Mac from 3 to 6 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver's Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.